Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, April 9th, 2018. And with me today, John Martellaro. How's it going, John?
Going great. Nice to be here.
Great to have you here. Dave Hamilton, I hope you are well.
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. And listeners, I'm so glad you are here with us. And call it a hunch, you guys have a lot to say, just a hunch. So, John, on Friday, you started talking about why you think the new Mac Pro is going to be fundamentally different. What do you mean?
Well, it all started when I read Matthew Panzerino's article at TechCrunch about his interface with Apple on the next generation, apparently 2019 Mac Pro, and what Apple's doing to design it and interacting with technical professionals, bringing them on board, making sure that they've eliminated any roadblocks in terms of computational issues with the hardware or your user interface. So it was a great article, and I highly recommend it, and I linked to it at the beginning of the article. But what, and a lot of people have leveraged off the article and drawn conclusions and tried to make extrapolations. But what I wanted to talk about was technical admiration. And that is, there is a state of mind that people have about a computer. And it's a little bit the technical professionals and creative professionals have about their tool. And it's a little different than maybe how some people feel about the swoopy lines of their MacBook Pro, the curve of the aluminum, the tactile touch, and so on. Because technical professionals have a track record of using certain kinds of tools, exploiting OpenCL, computational tools, simulations, where they understand how the hardware has to work for them. And how they understand parallel processing, and they understand highly threaded apps. And they know that in order to get their job done, a computer has to meet certain technical specifications, even if it's not the greatest looking computer on the planet. And for the last couple of years, I've been following Hewlett-Packard, of course, and writing a lot about how they do that. Hewlett-Packard computers are a little thicker, not swoopy. Their towers are towers. They're elegant in their physical manufacture, but they're not necessarily outwardly awesome.
And they're not the kind of thing that Johnny Ive is going to salivate over.
And I'm talking to you on a 2013 Mac Pro, which is awesomely beautiful and suits my needs perfectly as a writer. But we all recognized right away that it didn't meet the technical needs of a lot of people who were using cheese grater Mac Pros and swapping in and out video cards and swapping in and out drives and had full access to the innards of the computer and expandability. So as Matthew points out, the next machine's going to be pretty powerful and modular. But so what I wanted to focus on was the idea that when we get interested in a machine like this, we get interested in it because of the way it's designed to meet our computational and workflow needs, not necessarily by saying that the function should follow the form of the computer as they did with the 2013 Mac Pro. So that was the thesis of the article. And I finished with a little comment about the Mac Mini, which we can get into in a second.
So to make sure that that I'm on the same path as you with where you're going with this, you're talking about when someone sits down with their computer as like a professional using it as a work tool, they're looking at how fast is my processor? How much RAM can I have? How much storage do I have? How fast is that? What sort of video card do I have? Is it strong enough to do the tasks that I need it to do? Is my computer going to leave me sitting and waiting while it processes, which is downtime? Or is it going to crunch through tasks fast enough so that I remain productive when I'm sitting at my desk?
Right, and I'll add a footnote to that, and that is no limitations on the various ports. Sometimes you'll see specs that say, you know, we've got 4 Thunderbolt 3 ports, but two of them are not full speed or not fully capable, or some gotcha like that that you don't like to see because there was some engineering compromise made in the hardware. Well, that's something we don't want to see.
I think it's you know, kind of going back to what you said before, John, about how function followed form. initially with computers, especially desktop computers and especially tower computers, right? So rewinding way back. But like you said, they're still made today, just not by Apple. The tower computer was very much a form followed function design, right? We had this motherboard. We also
convection
needed,
heat flow upwards.
Right. Convection heat flow. We have a power supply with a fan, but we also need to put these slots in the motherboard. Mm-hmm. And so there was this whole process that happened. And it could be argued that Apple even started that in terms of like how the Apple II was put together. Now that wasn't a tower, but if you look inside it, if you only saw inside it, you'd be hard pressed, or someone that didn't know what an Apple II used to look like, would be hard pressed to tell you if that computer was built to be oriented, horizontally or vertically, right? Because it's the same as how things are laid out in a tower. I mean, a little bit differently here and there, but by and large, it's the same. You've got this motherboard, there's slots that go in, there's a CPU in the middle of the motherboard, there's RAM on the motherboard, there's a power supply, and then a keyboard connects to it, right? There was no mouse back then, but okay, right. But basically, like, that's what we lived with, and it evolved. And different companies did different things. There were some PC vendors that started getting really smart about how to open that up. Alienware really kind of took that to one extreme, specifically for gamers, and had like different lights and see-through panels and things like that. But they really, kind of like Apple did, made it, especially with those, like the G4s, made it super easy to open the thing up, put a new card in, close it back up. You didn't need...
There was that glorious little ring on the side where you just put your finger in there and opened up the entire side door. And it was still ran. You didn't have to shut it down.
Didn't even have to turn it off, although that is not a recommendation. That's right. That is simply an observation. Right. But someday I'll tell you about the time I put a modem in a Windows machine. It was right after Windows 95. I guess now is the time. The customer was sitting on the other side of the desk, and I put the modem in. It was a US Robotics modem, and it was a Windows 95 thing. And the customer said, "Oh, new hardware found." And I had this moment of panic, like, "Oh crap! I forgot to turn the computer off." So it can work. That day ended well, but anyway, like that's the form that followed the function, and we iterated.
Apple used to glorify that.
They glorified it. In fact, they were one of a few companies that really took that to a very convenient and in some ways elegant and, some would argue, beautiful extreme. Mm-hmm. Right?
Power Mac G5.
The Blue G3 was the first, right?
First. Yeah, I had one of those. So that was my favorite computer of all.
Gorgeous.
Time,
Blue I mean, G3. At the time. But that's then things changed. And, the Cube is a good example of how form took precedence over function. I think the current Mac Pro, old as it is, it's still current, folks. Mm-hmm. 2013, right? 5-year-old Mac Pro.
You still walk into an Apple store and walk out with one.
You got it. It's been upgraded a couple times. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like it's, 5 years old and done, but certainly the design is, and that is, perhaps the epitome of a desktop computer where function follows form, and many, many expandability sacrifices were made. So to circle this back to...
You guys were kidding me the other day about all the wires that come out of my Mac Pro.
Yeah.
And they're nicely hidden behind a 34-inch display.
right. But that's how it is. It's not only what you were saying, Jeff, where people, technical professionals, want their computer to operate in a certain way and be fast and not keeping them from doing their work and all of that stuff. That's true. But part of that, or perhaps in addition to that, need the expandability, right? And yes, Thunderbolt fundamentally changes the need for slots in a computer, right? But at the same time, when you want to do external GPU stuff, which we now can do as of the latest update to macOS High Sierra, what are you doing? You're connecting a Thunderbolt cable from your Mac to a breakout box that has slots in it, into which you put a graphics card. So, you know, like, that's a little bit of a stretch to say that we don't need slots anymore.
It makes the picture of the computer so much prettier.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right.
Boy, howdy.
So, but that's the thing is, like, that expandability matters to some. Far less now to all than it used to, right? Because it used to be that, like, you know, this my example before, I'll now make relevant, like, that was a person that needed their computer to have a slot in it in order to get online, right? This and then the same was true with that same person and that same computer, or the replacement that she had purchased for that same computer. When we went from having a modem that you dialed up to a cable modem that you connected to with Ethernet, well, guess what? We took the modem out. We put an Ethernet card in. Same kind of thing, right? You need that. We needed a general, every person out there needed a computer that was expandable like this. Nowadays, it's truly not that way, right? You can get away with it. Not having slots.
But along the way, Dave, that means by implication that Apple's perception of what pro means had to change. Five or 10 years ago, the pro computer was one that had slightly better specs, slightly more RAM, some additional features, but it wasn't head and shoulders computationally above the standard line.
Right.
Now, Apple has come to the realization, I think, thanks to competition, that a pro computer has to meet a much higher level of performance, hence iMac Pro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it sounds like they've realized for many pro users, the all-in-one, it's sealed, there's no internal expandability model isn't going to cut it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have an iMac Pro, which is terrific. We're going to have a 2019 Mac Pro, which is going to be expensive because it's going to be a computational monster and all sorts of extra hardware. And that hardware's got to be integrated into the system. And then Mac OS has to be qualified against all the new hardware. I'm guessing it's going to be a hybrid machine with maybe a combination of Intel and ARM processors doing different tasks to eliminate roadblocks in the architecture. But what's missing then, if you're going to, and Brian Chaffin didn't agree with me, but I thought the entry price would be like $79.95 for a Mac Pro in 2019. And nobody's going to be able to afford that except organizations. But as I mentioned in my article, we're back to the Sun workstation, SGI workstation thing. Nobody went out and bought a Sun workstation for their house, right?
Right.
But creative groups and technical groups and scientific researchers and government organizations and military people all had Sun workstations and astronomy labs all had Sun workstations on their desks. They paid $10,000 for them for starters. And then by the time you added some peripherals and another external hard disk for backup and some other gizmos, you were looking at $10,000-$15,000 plus a $2,000 a year annual software licensing fees and updates.
You see, so
these were serious propositions.
I don't think that pricing model works anymore, John.
It does for people who need the ultimate in computational capability. Now, we don't have the expensive maintenance fees anymore.
Yeah,
but there are people who go out and buy a Hewlett Packard Z workstation that has a terabyte of RAM in it.
Sure, right. But I don't think, like, when people would spend 10 grand on a Sun workstation, it was because that was way cheaper than buying a mainframe, right? I mean, it was like, how else are you going to do these types of calculations?
Well, I disagree because at Lockheed Martin, I went through that phase and we all had SGI Indies and Indigos and Sun workstations on our desk. And because the computational ability and RAM allocation of a standard PC and a standard Mac was pitiful compared to a Sun workstation.
Right.
It was 1997. I had a Sun workstation with a gigabyte of RAM, and my Mac had 64 megabytes. So,
but that's what I'm saying.
And I was doing Unix. I was doing real, you know, Unix, Solaris, Unix. And this was the workhorse for our computations and our science. And you couldn't get that on any other platform. And
that's exactly what I'm...
Not because we needed a mainframe. Or trying to cut by with a mainframe. It's because that was the kind of computational power we needed on our desktops.
but like I said, that's exactly what I'm saying, is you can get very close to that computational power with even just a, you know, moderately specced out 5K iMac, right? I mean, there's no more remarkable performance difference between that machine and iMac Pro. There are performance differences, but it's not comparing apples to oranges. It's comparing apples to apples. And it's like, yeah, this is better, but depending on how quickly you need things finished, that computer right there is probably good enough, right? There's not that massive delta that there was that you just described, right? Where, you know, the best Mac had 64 megs of RAM.
I will admit, maybe the iMac Pro is on Geekbench maybe 50% or 70% faster than an iMac.
Right.
5K.
Right. It's faster, but it's not orders of magnitude, right? You know, it's less than double.
Yeah, but I expect the Mac Pro to change that a little bit.
But it's not going to be orders of magnitude.
No.
You know what I mean?
Because of the immaturity of the PC and Mac market in 1999.
Correct.
When we were on G3s.
Yeah, you're right. When we were running those beautiful G3 towers that we just talked about. Yeah. No, but that's just it. It's like, I just don't. There's such a small and diminishing segment of the market that needs that pro machine. And I don't mean that the segment of the market is diminishing. I mean that the general purpose computer's abilities are expanding such that there's few left that truly need that kind of power. Want? Sure. Right? Like, no problem.
But there's two elements to this. One is the halo effect, and then there is the trickle-down effect. And they're sort of related. I mean, if you have an appetite for the technical brilliance of a really, really fast top line of computer, you sort of suspect that Apple knows what they're doing, and it also trickles down to the machines in the future,
mm-hmm.
and it also creates an aspiration for you too.
So from a marketing,
even though it's 2% of the market.
Yeah, exactly. Right. From a marketing, I don't even think it's that big, to be perfectly honest. I think it's
maybe
0.5%. Yeah. But from a marketing standpoint, right, but also from a vision standpoint and saying, look, this is where we're going, that's important, right? You need to have that product. It's good to have that product out there. But from a practical standpoint, it makes far less sense today than it did back when you were buying.
But it has trickle-down effects too, you know, and there was a time when you'd walk into NASA and everybody would have a Cheese Grater Mac Pro under their desk, and they'd have a MacBook Pro in their lap.
Sure.
For travel. So when the computational system changes to Hewlett-Packard or maybe Microsoft in some cases, or Dell, then people start saying, well, why are we using MacBooks, but all our serious desktop computers are Dells and Hewlett-Packards? What's going on here? And then the people start thinking about that contrast and compatibility and app compatibility. And then guess what? Pretty soon the MacBook Pros start disappearing.
So what you just said is really interesting to me. And I know Jeff's going to cut us off soon, but you just used the term serious desktop computer. And I think what Apple has is a marketing problem, not a computational problem. With their pro level desktops, right? Because in order to get that, there is a perception issue, and perhaps not having slots or not having that modularity that Apple's promising us, but being less than descriptive about, right? Like, maybe they figured that that's their problem, is not that the Mac Pro's not fast enough to do these things, but it doesn't appeal for those purposes because it's basically, you know, a closed box. I realize it's not, but it sure seems that way when you're mm-hmm. comparing it. So maybe that's the key right there, is what defines that serious desktop computer.
Yeah, and kind of nibbled around the edges of that in Friday's particle debris. That's that technical mentality.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of components to it.
It does, yeah. But I don't think computational power is the biggest problem for Apple to solve. They've solved that. And I think for many people, you know, not even an iMac Pro, just a 5K iMac is way more power than even most technical professionals need. but it doesn't have that feel of a serious desktop computer.
Don't even get me started about the celebration of Unix, in which we don't see anymore, and there's no longer a special dedicated page to Apple's Unix.
Right. I think John just got himself started on that.
I think he did. Well, that's because everything runs it, including your Apple TV and your watch, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, that's over. Yeah. That makes sense. That has arrived. Awesome. The box.
So before we wrap up, I'm wondering, do you guys think, and this is to me what you've been talking around a little bit for the past couple minutes, that the real problem that Apple is having for many of its professional users is that they want to have the perception of easy expandability, even if they're never going to swap out any card in their computer. They just want to know they can.
The problem is one marketing message fits all, and they don't have a dedicated marketing page anymore or marketing focus towards the technical professionals. They expect to build, you know, an iMac Pro and then have some meetings and invite the press in, and then everybody goes all gaga and about it. And, you know, it requires some infrastructure and some attitude and some support and some glorification and some focus on Apple, and that's been missing from Apple, and Hewlett-Packard's been providing it in spades in their initiatives. I mean, you go to the International Space Station, what do you find? ZBooks, right? You don't find any MacBook Pros.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would answer yes to your question, Jeff. Yeah. I think the GPU thing is the probably will be the most popular expansion for that market.
Oh, I bet you're right.
But I think even still, most people that buy that new Pro machine won't actually leverage the expandability.
Yep.
What we need in the meantime, I'm going to get 30 seconds in here, okay, Jeff?
Okay.
What we need in the meantime is, because the Mac Pro is going to be so expensive, what we need is a headless Mac for people who will still want to attach their own displays. And that's why I got some good hits when I linked to my review of this Hewlett-Packard Z2 Mini. The initial reaction I got to that review, it's a beautiful computer. It's 110 gigaflops. It's got all sorts of ports, and it's got two drives and an SSD, and it's just a glorious little computer. And it's not real expensive. And my first reaction from a lot of readers was, wow, can I put Mac OS on it? Because they were in love with the hardware. So if Apple came out with a new Mac Mini that was beautiful, headless, had advanced state-of-the-art specs, under $2,000, it would solve the problem of people saying, well, I'd like to have a Mac Pro, but I can't afford $8,000 or $9,000 for one. So when we have an iMac Pro and a new glorious Mac Mini like the Z2 Mini from Hewlett-Packard and the Mac Pro for the technical professionals, we're going to have a really great Mac lineup, plus the 5K iMacs for the everyday people. So I'm optimistic about the future of the Mac.
I'm optimistic as well, and I'm really looking forward to seeing if Apple gives us any more hints about what's coming with the Mac Pro at WWDC in June. So
That would be nice. Yeah. I'm guessing not.
Yeah, but
if they release the Mac Mini at WWDC, I would be overjoyed. I would be writing for weeks.
Well,
so would a lot of other people.
Okay, well then maybe Apple will give you something to write about. Let's live in hope. Okay, and we are really so way out of time.
Okay, I relent.
Okay, thank you. John, thanks for being here today.
Hey, it was fun. My pleasure.
And Dave, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, this was good.
It was great. I love days like this. I wouldn't want it every day, but I love days like this where I can just take like two people, a topic, drop you into the pit and say, and go. And then my job is just to try and get you to stop so that we can wrap up the show.
Was your popcorn buttered?
No, because I have a dairy allergy.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, but that's okay. I make really good popcorn anyhow. Listeners, I am so glad that you were here. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.